Okay, welcome to Tarpon World Radio. This is Captain Barry Baruti with Captain Morris and Fishing Frank himself.
We're just excited to be here.
Are you guys?
Yeah, we're glad to be here.
Great. Well, this is a great track by Morgan Wallen I chose called Up Down. I listen to it every time I go fishing sometimes. It gets me in the mood. So let's talk fishing.
I got to say, I didn't really know that song very well, and I didn't realize the whole thing's about a bobber going up and down. It's watching the fish take the bobber float under the water. It comes back up. Bobber goes under the water, comes back up. And then they kind of do a double entendre about bringing the beer up and down.
Exactly.
So I thought that was pretty cool.
Has many references, yeah.
Yeah. Life's ups and downs.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd heard it on the radio, but I had no idea what it meant. It's all about a bobber. Cool. I wish I made money off of bobbers like that.
Going up and down, up and down. So, yeah.
So, anyway, so this is your first show, Barry.
How does it feel? It's a lot to handle at first, but I'm going to get the hang of it. There's a lot of clicking, voice recognition, trying to make sure everything is kosher, but I'll get it.
Oh, I know you will. Yeah. So, anyway, I'm glad to be your first guest on your very first show.
Well, thank you. Thank you, guys.
I'm glad to be your second guest on your show.
That's Captain Morris. So let's start with you, Captain Morris. Since the American Red Snapper just opened, the season did, and a lot of people like anticipate this throughout the entire year because it's heavily regulated. How did you do this the last few trips out in the Gulf of Mexico?
We did fine. We caught our line of the Red Snapper, and some of them were on the larger side of large, and some were pretty good size. And you can hear me now.
Yeah.
All right, very good.
And yep. How big was, when you say large?
Our largest snapper was 26 pounds.
How long is that?
Like, it's 40 inches.
40 inches?
Can you imagine a snapper 40 inches long?
A snook 40 inches long is quite substantial, but a snapper 40 inches long?
Yeah, and he fights a lot harder than a snook at that size.
I bet.
How tall would that fish be?
He's probably a good 15 inches tall, 18 inches tall.
Oh, my gosh.
You figure 15, 18 inches wide and 40 inches long, that's a lot of, I don't know, side pressure?
Well, in order to take the picture, my first mate and I actually held the snapper up, let the young lady that caught the biggest one get her hands under it, stepped away, took the picture real quick, and she dropped the fish.
It was just for that moment.
That 26 pounds of dead weight is really hard to hold with your arms, you know, unless you cradle.
It's like
body.
Doing a curl.
It is.
Yeah, that's a lot. Now, how far out would you say? People talk about going 60, 80 miles. Do you think that's far enough?
Yeah, it's plenty far enough. We were 60 miles out when we caught that one.
Wow.
What about 60 feet of water?
60 feet of water, you'll catch one every now and again, but you know, most of the time they're past 100 feet.
The big ones, right? The substantial.
The bigger, you know, you'll encounter more American Red Snapper past 100 feet, and you get out past 130 feet, then you'll start to encounter some really big ones.
Wow. And when you find the American Red Snapper, do you find them along with other fish? Like if you drop down, is it just American Reds, or how do you know you're in the right territory?
Yeah, well, you'll see a show of big arches above whatever structure you're on. They prefer the same kind of structure that gag grouper and mangrove snapper and yellowtails like. They really like things that stick up off the bottom, relief, things like that. You know, definitely pay attention to those. And if you go over a spot and there's an enormous spike of fish coming off the bottom in 130, 140 or deeper water, go back and look at that, because most of the time the red snapper, which are so highly endangered that they're completely protected and and regulated out of existence.
Now, do I detect a moment of sarcasm there?
they actually are so plentiful on these spots that you can't see the actual structure on the bottom for the show of fish over it.
Wow.
So you can go over a 4-foot ledge, 3-foot ledge out in 150 feet of water, and you'll never see any change on the bottom. All you'll see is just a massive arch, a conglomeration of arches sticking up off the bottom.
And that's it. Are they that picky when it comes to bait selection?
No, they're not picky at all. You know, whatever you put down, they're going to eat, basically, from dead squid to live bait.
Wow.
We caught one of those largest fish. We caught one that was 24 pounds on a vertical jig
You didn't even need live or dead bait. It was just artificial.
No, it was just one of the vertical jigs. I mean, one of the metal jigs.
Yeah, that
Williamson.
We're selling Vortex. A ton of those little. They're about 3.5 inches long, and they're kind of wide. You're using the 6-inch.
Yeah, they're.
How heavy are the ones you're using?
Four to 8 ounce.
Okay, because we've been going through a ton of them.
People tend to buy too small of a jig for those fish, and if you go with a bigger jig, we catch scamp on them. We catch yellowtails on them. We catch almost everything on them.
Cool.
So, they're easier to fish with a bigger jig. The lighter jig, it doesn't do as well.
That's good. And it goes straight to the bottom quicker. You're fishing more effectively as well, I can imagine.
You actually are, and they tend to put smaller hooks on the... And you can change the hooks. You can buy the assist hooks. We carry them here at Fish and Frank's. But the normal size hook that comes on the smaller jig is too small because they'll hook up and they'll tear that hook, small hook right
out. Bends right out or tears it. Gotcha.
Yeah, because, I mean, I've been going through and trying to figure out which ones, because I haven't been lucky enough to get out this year. I've barely been outside the door of the store.
That's true.
Much less anything. Remodel's killing me. So, and we're pretty much wrapping it up. I've only got a little bit more to do, and then we're kind of done. And I'm going snapper fishing with you. I've seen this. A lot of people are bringing some amazing American red snapper that I look at these pictures with Morris, and it looks like they get a billboard in front of them.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. Somebody said you photoshopped that in there, and I said, well, I'm getting a little better with the Photoshop.
Yeah.
No, it's not photoshopped. It's just a.
No, I did hear one of the guys come in and he said they were dropping live pinfish down and they weren't doing anything. They started dropping whole squid down and started nailing with it. And is that something that's common with the American Reds?
They like whole squid, yeah.
But, I mean, sometimes it's all about live bait, sometimes about dead bait, what do you do? Do you just drop everything at first and see what they want?
Yeah, they're not as crazy about a pinfish as you would think. Mangrove snapper love pinfish, and most other fish eat a pinfish. The American red snappers, they seem to prefer the squirrel fish if you're going to use a live bait.
Now, how big would a squirrel fish be?
You can't get them too big.
Really? So 10, 12 inches?
Yep. You can use a foot-long squirrel fish, and they would have no problem eating it. But... the number one bait, if you really want to consistently produce American red snapper and your finest ones, you take the sabiki rigs and you fish the bottom with them and you catch cigar minnows. The cigar minnow is a member of the scad family. He's round. He's got a round body, tapered sharply, and he is premium. It's like putting a 12, 14-inch shiner in front of a big bass.
Yeah, we sell. I have 5-pound boxes of Ballyhoo. Spanish sardines, Indian sardines, cigar minnows, all these other ones, but the cigar minnow is the number one. Do you know, it was cigar minnows my first thing as a commercial fisherman. I was out in the Panhandle catching cigar minnows. Easiest way to tell a cigar minnow from the regular sardines is where the tail is. On each side, it's really rough. If you go from back to front there, it's like nasty rough right there, but between the tail and the dorsal and the back of that cigar minnow. Otherwise, it kind of looks like a sardine, about the same thing. But cigar minnows don't fall off the hook the way a sardine does.
Uh-huh.
So sardines are a lot less money, but it's hard to get a sardine down 120 feet without it falling off the hook.
Falling off or like disintegrating or something, but the cigar minnow will stay intact. And
yeah, that's one of the things that makes a cigar minnow such good bait is whether they're frozen or live, you put it on the hook, it will stay on the hook until something takes it off.
Yeah. When it hits the bottom, if they're a red snapper there, it probably won't hit the bottom.
Wow.
But, you could be letting it down and everything will just accelerate. You'll have a red snapper on it. If it does make it to the bottom, he's not going to live there long.
And it's just light. It doesn't matter, like you said, live or dead, right? I know you said
I would prefer the live, but the deads are fine. And there's another technique for hooking those on to make them last. Is you pinch the tail off of it immediately, and you run your hook in, like you were Texas rigging a plastic worm.
Okay.
And then take the hook and bury it back into the midsection body of the sardine or the cigar minnow, and it won't spin on the way down. Number one. And when it does get down there, it's still on your hook. And the hook being buried in the body has absolutely no relevance on hooking up, because those fish, when they bite it, they crush it down and destroy it.
And I can imagine if it's alive, it's when you cut off the tail, it's wiggling on the bottom with its head straight up.
I wouldn't do that with a live one, but a dead one.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Wow.
So, have you been out, Barry?
I haven't been past 11 miles this summer. So I actually went for a permit, but I did not go for American Reds yet. That's something to...
Yeah, I got the same thing, man. I wish... I would like to get out there. I used to love being out in deep water, and I don't get much of a chance anymore. So I got to get out there and get that done. So anything else out there doing pretty good, Morris?
We've been catching a lot of dolphin. I mean, nice dolphin. Some of them, you know, we had one...
Your hook and flipper. Oh, no.
Let's clarify that.
Dorado, mahi-mahi, not flipper.
Yeah.
Yeah. Frank, we're dating ourselves here because flipper is long gone.
Yeah, I know. But, you know, I just, I'm old. You know, my humor's old. I can't help it.
I know it. I resemble that remark.
That's why I go give talks to some of the fishing clubs. I tell Dean Martin jokes and stuff like that. I say, this is awesome because you guys actually know what I'm talking about. Half the people in the store don't even know who Dean Martin is. I'm like, oh. So anyway, Barry, what questions you got for us here, buddy?
All right. So the next question was, I'm just trying to put it like a little strategy the next time I go out there and going out for American Reds. The dolphins you're finding.
Weed lines.
That's it.
There are amazing weed lines out there right now. I mean, I've been out there this week, and all over the weekend, last week. Every time out, there are weed lines. I mean, world class, Key West marathon style weed lines.
Textbook. Uh-huh.
I mean, you know, I'm hesitant to drop a bottom bait. You know, and these things are starting anywhere from like 45, 50 miles out as far as you care to go. I fished them as deep as 315 feet, but we were catching beautiful. We had 28 dolphin in 165 feet of water. We had two wahoo and a blackfin tuna. And, you know, couple that with a box full of American Reds, and I clean fish for way too long.
Exactly. Oh, my goodness. So, and do you, like, troll for the weed lines, or do you see
them?
Yeah,
we troll rig ballyhoos there, but take some live bait out with you. The live cigars and everything you have for your snapper work tremendous on the bigger dolphin. If you got smaller ones, you know, spend a little time and take 150 minnows out with you, cast net, some white bait. You know, don't go overboard and black your well out and, you know, have a ton of dead bait. Just take enough that you can use.
Treat bait fish the way they do snook, redfish, grouper. Because if we use up all the bait indiscriminately, we're not going to have any for the fish.
Exactly.
Fish need that to stay alive, not just for us to catch them. So treat every piece of bait like when you kill one, you've killed 250.
Exactly.
So every pair that you kill is 500 bait fish that won't be there next year. So use them that way. Think of it as a trout or a snook or a bass, where you want to do everything you can to keep as much bait alive, so that otherwise they're going to regulate us out of this.
I know, that would be very tough.
Yeah, and before long the scaled sardine is going to be a highly endangered species, and it's going to be protected with closed seasons.
So are you noticing a decline in the, or anything like that, Morris? Or
no, I haven't seen a decline, but this, one of the things that bothers me is you get a guy that takes 400 or 500 minnows at a pop and just blacks the wells out in his boat, and he goes and fishes and he uses 100 of them, you know, and he says, well, I let the rest of them go. Yeah, but you took them to the boat ramp or your dock and you let them go. Most of them die and get eaten, and they never get back to the grass flats because you're up a canal or something. Yeah. So relocation is not good for them either.
Yeah.
So, you know, kind of put them in a similar area from where you found them.
Yeah.
You know, if you caught them back in the grass flats, release them in the grass flats. If you come out in the middle by a marker, release them out by in the middle of the harbor somewhere. And now, I like keeping like a half a dozen in the live well that I'll release when I get back to my dock, because I always see that one fish. And the problem is, if you do that, you're never going to see those great big monster fish, because when I come back and I have no bait left, the biggest fish I've ever seen in my life is sitting right there. By keeping, you know, six or so bait fish in the well until I get home, pretty much eliminates me finding any really big fish. So, wow. But I eliminate the frustration.
That's very true. You like have a peace of mind that going back in, if there's a big fish, you might have a chance, but he's not going to be there when you have the bait.
Right. It's like when you're in the bait business. If I have thousands and thousands of big shrimp in the tank, nobody comes in the door. If I get hundreds of customers, I get no bait. If you get lots of bait, you got no customers. If you get lots of customers, you got no bait. It's just one of the ways things work. And it's the same thing when I get on the water. No, I'm not unlucky, boys and girls. I just have an unusual... I guess I'm kind of unlucky that way.
Let's call it as it is.
Let's just say I'm screwed. Okay.
So there is a little twinge of truth to the old fishless Frank.
Yeah. Well, especially now in the last little bit. And then I found out I was escapism fishing. I'm going out and I'm saying, what's wrong with me? I'm not catching these big fish I used to. I used to go out and catch 20, 30 snook and redfish and all this, catch all these monster fish. I was, literally at one point famous for monster triple tail, like 30 inches long.
That was your thing, huh?
And I'm not catching those. And then I found out, okay, I'm looking, and if I see a lot of people over there, I'm going the other way, whether I catch fish or not.
That's
I'm
right.
going out to escape reality. I just want it quiet. I don't have a radio on my boat. I just want to go out and escape everything, and fishing is my way to get away from it all.
I think that's what a lot of people use fishing for, as an escape, peace, clear mind, everything like that.
Well, I think the biggest reason that offshore fishing is, we forget, but when Bush was president, gas was like $5 a gallon, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Obama was four something a gallon, and now gas is down to like $2.30, I think, a gallon.
Very reasonable now.
So now guys can actually go offshore, and it costs them a few $100, not thousands of dollars.
Exactly.
So trolling's coming back big time. All this other kind of stuff is coming back big time. We tend to forget how expensive gas was, and now we're hearing American red snappers going off the chain because you can actually, it's affordable to go out and fish for it.
Exactly.
Fuel-wise.
Even though it was open a couple years ago, not many people would go out because of the price of gas that affected a lot of people.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
and then we had that one year, we had a three-day season.
Three-day season, we had a hurricane in the Gulf.
Yeah. I mean, we had a three-day season, and you couldn't get on the water.
Yeah.
Don't get me started on that, because there was a 365-day commercial season when we had a three-day season.
The problem is people don't realize, they think when they close recreational fishermen, it's closed to commercial. That's not true.
Not true.
And this trout closure date, it was the first time they actually closed it to recreational and commercial.
Wow.
That's the first closure I know of that affected the commercial industry. And I'm very pro commercial fishermen because I rely on them. The commercial fishermen are not the enemy. Our government's our enemy because we pay the penalty as recreational because we don't use the right lobbyists. Commercial guys, they're smart. They pay lobbyists to bribe the politicians to give them the laws they want. And that's how it works in the U.S.
And these are appointed officials, of whom half of them were commercial lobbyists.
Yeah, and do you think that the trout being closed commercially and recreationally, that's like saying something. Have you ever seen that before, Frank? Does that mean that they're affected quite a bit?
No, I haven't seen a commercial closure. The only thing they did was redfish.
Yeah, they
closed redfish.
When they closed the trout, they actually closed it both commercial and recreational. That's the first time I saw that. So and the thing about the trout closure is, for 5 years, we've had issues with trout.
Oh, yeah.
So it's the only one of the three closures that actually makes sense. The redfish closure, pretty dumb. I mean, you could kind of get behind that one. But the snook closure was just stupid. And it's just a bunch of people at FWC who are people call them names so they close the season on fish to say, look at me, I'm a good guy.
You had a whole lot of guys that are internet stars and Facebook stars and things like that, and they actually went, oh, it's gloom and doom, we've lost every snook, we've lost this, that, and the other. We lost a lot of snook.
Of course
yes,
we did, yeah.
Of course we did. But if I could speak to the National Marine Fisheries Council, I would say, look, there is no way that you can accurately tell me how many fish live underneath the water.
Are you kidding? I saw guys from Captains for Clean whatever they are, because I know some of them guys, I actually like them, but I think it's the biggest ripoff in history, that literally were on the internet saying, we counted 100,000 snook. Personally, we counted them. And then they said, well, maybe 50. And then it was down to 20. And then it was down to 10. Well, we counted. We actually physically counted each one. I said, go ahead. Start right now. Count to 10,000, Bucky. See how you do. Yeah. All right. Yeah. So anyway, I haven't gotten offshore much. But I'm kind of big into, right now, sneak away, getaway fishing. And one of the things that's kind of fun, if you just want a real quick meal, is to slip in the harbor and get some Spanish mackerel.
Oh, my gosh, yes. Yes.
I mean, cook the same day with butter, lemon herb seasoning, flay it up. Now, the one cool thing is you got to take that little fin off the belly and take an extra scoop around it. It's got little connector bones that I used to get always. That was my piece that had that bone in it. But it's probably the only fish, if Terry and I are going for dinner, I keep three Spanish mackerel, mm-hmm. one and a half for each of us, because even with the side dishes, we still eat at least one and a half a piece. With a normal fish, one for her, one for me, or, you know, some fish, it's like we get one and we each split half the fillet. But with the Spanish mackerel, if I got two people eating, I want three Spanish mackerel for two people, because... Exactly. Once you put the butter on it and the lemon herb, you put that down on the grill, and then as it's getting brown, put a little more butter, a little more lemon herb, flip it, brown on both sides, done, and awesome, same day. Next day, it's really kind of mushy. The day after that, it's no good.
Yeah, mackerel has
after
to be
you
fresh,
freeze so. It, it's cat food.
Right. I'm salivating over here a little bit, not gonna lie. But what would you say is your favorite way to, like, just target them? Do you keep it simple? Do you get bait? Do you troll? How do you do it, Frank?
Trolling. And then when I hit one, I go casting.
There you go. You just troll until you find one, because when there's one, there's going to be quite a few around. There's a
exactly.
school around.
Why would I just want to go sit somewhere and wait for them to come when I can troll and look for them? And then as soon as the rod goes off, I just stop and I start casting.
Right. Yeah. And I was going to add to that, like the past couple like weeks in the harbor, there has been, I know we were just touching on bait, there has been pods and pods of bait around. It's been so nice to see this. And there's a lot of, like, threadfin pods, and you throw in them, and this happened actually on this past Saturday. In one cast, we had skipjack, we had a lot of threadfins, that was the majority of the bait. We had some white bait in there, and we also had these menhadens that we don't see too often in the harbor.
Oh, they come in a lot, but you just don't get them a lot.
Exactly. There was a whole mix in these cast nets, and there were Spanish mackerel, like, skying on the sides of the schools, like, so everything is, like, feeding on them. The harbor is, like, very alive with bait. That was very interesting to see. And I'm sure as long as the bait are around, the Spanish will be around
and
as well.
Don't be surprised if you see a king mackerel skyrocket in those pods.
Yeah.
Because I have caught them way almost to the bridge, at the 41 bridge.
Really?
I've caught them off of Ponce de Leon out in the harbor.
Wow. The closest I've caught one was actually on Alligator Creek Reef. But that was
there you go.
It was a 10-pounder. I mean, that's not big for offshore, but to see that in the harbor, mm-hmm. that was like, it was a freak. I thought it was the biggest Spanish mackerel ever. But
that's why people don't understand there's king mackerel in the harbor, because when they catch them in the harbor, they automatically say they're Spanish. Unless they're monstrous, and then they come in and go, what is this? It was really but the biggest Spanish mackerel. Well, that's a king.
Yeah.
And they don't realize they're here because the vast majority of the king mackerel are smaller when
exactly.
they come up in the harbor.
Actually won the St. Petersburg King of the Beach tournament inside Charlotte Harbor, king mackerel tournament, and it won an SKA tournament out of St. Pete and John's Pass inside Boca Grand Pass in the harbor up on the hill.
Really? That is unbelievable.
38 and 42 pounds.
Wow.
Now they're there. We get some big fish up in the harbor because people don't realize that fish don't stick their head up out of the water and go, oh, look, that's a lighthouse. I'm going into Port Charlotte Harbor.
There's borders
there's
or something.
No barrier.
Right? Yeah, they got a passport to go in, you know. So
I mean, they literally, if it's saltwater like it is in the Gulf, they just kind of go up in the harbor and they do their thing. If there's food, they go there and eat.
Okay. Well, that's going to wrap up our episode today. We are out of time. So thank you, Morris and Frank, for being on my
Enjoyed
first show.
It. Thank you for inviting.
And let's go out with some tunes. How about that?